Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM America and the American Radio Relay League Sweepstakes CW Contest, which runs November 3rd to November 5th. For more information, visit ARRL.org/sweepstakes.
This is Ham Nation, episode 71 for October 31st, 2012, Hams on Halloween. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation tonight. I'm George, W5JDX, and we've got Gordo from Costa Mesa with us. Good evening, Gordo.
Well, good evening, George, and good to see all of you on the tube. And, you know, I think tonight we're going to dedicate this podcast to those brave men and women on the East Coast that are going through just one of the horriblest times in their life when it comes to hurricanes and all of the devastation. We're certainly hoping that the ham radio operators on the East Coast are making good use of the skills. We cannot hear too much here on the West Coast from the HF relief nets, but we did catch this one call, this ominous call last night, indicating that the barrier islands. Well, take a listen for yourself.
Lacey Township. Okay, very good. And did I understand you said that one of the barrier islands that's in your area is underwater? Is that now where?
And indeed, the barrier island was underwater. So it's tough times, and all of us certainly are thinking of the ham radio operators and all the citizens of New Jersey, New York, and surrounding states hit by this devastating storm. So hang in there. I'll be back in New York City in 2 weeks and hope to meet some of you and maybe pull some duty in filling sandbags or emptying sandbags. George, back to you.
Well, thanks for that update, Gordo. Yeah, it has been rough up there. You know, generally down here in the south, our hurricanes have more wind to them. But when they hit up north there, you know, the population density is so much greater there. It affects so many people. Anyway, we've also got Don Wilbanks with us tonight. Good evening, Don.
Hey, how are you? Good to see everyone tonight. Yeah, it was absolutely horrible along the East Coast. Of course, you know, we just went through a little storm we had down here, and of course Katrina 7 years ago. And I got to tell you, I had some Katrina flashbacks watching everything that was going on out there, and this was a lot worse than Irene, which hit really close to the same area last year. It was just all in the angle, and of course, this confluence of all these different, you know, the tropical system plus the winter weather system, and merging together into what they call now the superstorm. It's actually, that's what they're calling it now, a superstorm, Sandy. And we'll have some images from the affected area, and I'll also have a rundown on what's going on, some of the damage and devastation that's going on down there a little bit later on. So, George, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Don. And, you know, Cheryl does the chat room with us. And, well, Cheryl's not here tonight, but we recruited someone that you've probably seen before. It's my other Tom friend, Tom Samasico. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, guys. Glad to be on.
We'll be getting back with you a little later on. And so anyone in the chat room there has got a question for any of the crew here. Address it to Tom there. He'll be watching the chat room for us tonight. Cheryl had to work late, so she won't be here this episode. And talking more about the hurricane, Don, what else can you tell us about it?
Well, I can give you some numbers, pretty much Sandy by the numbers. And we've got some images there, too, Alex, if you want to run those underneath me. About 2.1 million New Jersey homes and businesses still don't have any power. In New Jersey's Brick Township, a fire ripped through some homes ignited by broken natural gas lines. Police now say there are more than 100 homes along the oceanfront either burned or totally destroyed by the hurricane. Reports of people drowning inside their stranded cars. Nationwide, the death toll from Hurricane Sandy has surpassed 55. Another 69 were killed by the storm in the Caribbean. The system still reaches from the Appalachians to the Great Lakes and beyond to Canada. It's triggered winter storm warnings from the mountains of Pennsylvania to those of eastern Tennessee and North Carolina. The mountain regions in Maryland and West Virginia could see an additional 5 to 10 inches of snow, making for a total of 1 to 3 feet dropped by this superstorm system. And just horrible, horrible pictures from up there. Farther north, the National Weather Service warns of the possibility of continued flooding due to rainfall. High southerly winds could blow a small storm surge into the upper shores of the eastern Great Lakes. So this thing is huge, absolutely huge. High tides along the coast will come in on top of what's left of Sandy's storm surge, possibly causing some flooding. And a running tally reflects a steady restoration of power now to affected areas. But early today, still, nearly 6.3 million customers are without power in 15 states in Washington. That's at Crane. And look at all those taxi cabs that were stranded. In Connecticut, two people were killed, one of them a firefighter in Easton, killed by falling trees. Still, almost 500,000 customers without power there in Connecticut. Delaware, almost 9,000 people without power. In D.C., power has been nearly completely restored. There are still about 1,800 without power earlier today. Metro bus and rail service is expected to be back to normal. Was expected to be back to normal today. Up in Maine, more than 80% of power outages have been remedied, thankfully, according to Central Power in Maine. About 16,000 customers still without electricity. Two people died in Maryland. They had a raw sewage leak in Maryland. That was a problem there. 182,000 customers without power. In Massachusetts, 111,000 customers without power. In New Hampshire, about 83,000 people without power. In New Jersey was horribly hit. At least 6 people killed in New Jersey. It's going to take weeks for rail service to resume on the coastline. Down trees covering the tracks, ripped power lines, sections of track washed out. What else is going on? PATH train service, which typically carries almost 300,000 people into the Hudson River to New York City each weekday, will take 6 to 9 days to restore. In New York, at least 15 people died in New York State, according to the governor there. The NYPD said a higher number of fatalities for New York City alone, placing the total at 22. Let's see. Amtrak flooding into its tunnels in the Hudson and East Rivers make it impossible to predict when service will be restored to Penn Station. 80 houses lost in a fire in the Breezy Point section of Queens. JFK and Newark Liberty International Airport were to reopen today, this morning, with limited service. LaGuardia, Teterboro still closed. About 2 million people still without power earlier today. North Carolina, 2 people died. The captain of the HMS Bounty is still missing in North Carolina. State of emergency for 24 counties in the western part of that state remain in effect because of snow. 152,000 Ohio homes and businesses without power. Pennsylvania, the same, about 903,000 homes and businesses without power there. In Rhode Island, 66,000 customers without electricity. In Virginia, 2 people died, about 60,000 without power, and a lot of heavy snowfall. West Virginia has problems as well. Almost 250,000 customers had lost power, 1 fatality there. Snow expected in the Appalachians. And in Canada, Superstorm Sandy is adrift to the north towards Canada. Gale force winds across the Great Lakes. Power has been restored now to 113,000. 37,000 still without electricity in Canada. The effects are still going to be felt for a few days in Ontario, and authorities are blaming flying debris for the death of a Toronto woman. So just a horrible, horrible state of events from this storm. A lot of damage. The toll, of course, is still being counted. But from what I heard today, Katrina was still almost double, I think, as far as money wise, the damage. But this, of course, covered a much wider area. But our thoughts and prayers go to all those people along the Northeast be dealing with this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And believe me, those of us down here in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, we feel your pain. I saw lineman trucks heading north on I-59 this morning as I was heading south to work. So help is on the way from the electric companies, George.
Yeah, Don. I know I heard on the local news here a day or so back, a group of employees here from energy were headed that direction. And that's good that these energy companies have these agreements in place where they can help out one another when a disaster strikes like this. And we know Ham Radio is there helping out in the thick of things through a lot of these electrical failures and different communication failures. I personally haven't been involved in any of that, so don't know any details or statistics on it. And changing the subject a little bit now, this past weekend was the CQ Worldwide Single Sideband Contest. And I think, Gordo, you've got a little update for us, don't you?
Yeah, K3 Lima Romeo, winner, winner, winner. Wow, what an operation, and running modest power, not a big KW, but just 100 watts on many of the stations. Congratulations to K3LR. Also, congratulations to Ray himself, Mr. ICOM America. Ray accumulated 143,300 points from Bellevue. So that is terrific. Congratulations, Ray. And for those that took part in the contest, just a great job. And that is 100 watts was all that these stations were running. So the big contest is coming up, and we'll talk about it shortly. But again, regarding Sandy and all of the hams that are out taking part, congratulations to the Salvation Army team, the Saturn Network. They've been doing a marvelous job. Coast Guard Auxiliary, MARS, all of the Aries, Races, individual hams just pitching in. So ham radio operators, there's still plenty of time. And if you go to the Saturn.org bulletin board, you too, as we have, can be passing some of those phone calls that we make out here, telling loved ones that their loved ones back in the East Coast are okay. So again, congratulations to those of you that are part of a group or maybe just on your own as a well-prepared emergency ham radio communicator for making things happen. And for the rest of us on the other side of the country, we learn a lot just by watching and saying, if that happened here, how could we stay on the air? So a lot of lessons learned. And again, congratulations this past weekend. And wow, was it exciting on 10 meters as well. George, back to you.
Yeah, Gordo, I understand they've already had 5,100 people send in their logs for that contest. And Ray wanted us to remind everyone to get your logs on in. I think that's perhaps one problem we have after contests. Some people look at their results there and say, well, I don't have enough to win. But, you know, send them on in anyway, because they'd like to count and know the numbers of, you know, exactly how many people did participate in the contest. Well, Gordo, I think I saw Julian in the background there a moment ago. And, Julian, I know you've got a couple of nice videos for us tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you. Actually, one of them is not mine. The other one is. The first one is from Albert Tejera, KK4NT. He deals with the Scouts, and he wanted to send in this video of the Jamboree on the Air in Central Florida. So, Alex, if you don't mind running the video.
On October 20th and 21st of 2012, young boys and Girl Scouts, along with ham radio operators around the world, got together to celebrate Jamboree on the Air. This is a day when amateur radio operators share the thrill and excitement of ham radio to the younger generation. We'll take a look at two Central Florida locations that participated in the event. The first stop is Camp Roreen, located on northwest of Tampa, Florida. Camp Roreen is appropriately situated on Boy Scout Road in Odessa, Florida. This beautiful campground with 64 acres hosted hundreds of families that camped out to participating in scouting events this weekend. Bill Bode, N4WEB, the president of Tampa Amateur Radio Club, headed the effort at this camp. A few of us got together the night before to set up some 2-meter antennas and pack the equipment to be set up in the morning. The spot reserved for us was behind Swed Hall, in an outdoor patio deck nestled between tall, shady trees. Kids lined up as they eagerly got a chance to talk to other scouts and hams worldwide. Retired local television news reporter Warren Alley, W1GUD, was there patiently showing kids how to make contacts and new friends far away. Interested scouts got a chance to learn about digital PSK modes. They also got a chance to talk on D-Star and analog 2-meter and 70-centimeter band repeaters. Of course, scouts also got to try their luck finding a hidden transmitter in the woods. This camp provided lots of other activities for the kids and families. Climbing, archery, and all kinds of events filled the day with lots of fun and interesting things to do.
Over.
As the day grew late, it became time to pack up and call it a day. On the next day, we set up at the Museum of Science and Industry. This time, the event was hosted by the resident amateur club, KM0SI, with President Paul Girardi, KE4TP, there to greet us. Today's event was led by Tony D'Angelo, N2MFT, president of Mid-Florida DX Association, W4FDX. Scouts trickled in throughout the day and were treated to software-defined radio transmissions and digital PSK transmissions. So in conclusion, Jamboree on the Air, now in its 55th year, was another great day for meeting new friends, fox hunting with radios, learning modern digital radio technology, and just plain having fun for scouts and ham radio operators around the world.
Albert, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Again, that was for Albert Tejera, KK4NT, from Central Florida. And I think Jota was enjoyed by many, many people. I know I was actually able to make a few contacts with some stations who were running the Jota event. So that was really good. Another event that happened just this past Sunday was the K6H Special Event Station, hosted by the PAPA system here in Southern California. And we spoke to stations all over the United States and all over the world, both on HF and VHF and D-Star and Echolink and you name it, we did it. So I put together this little video, which kind of show you the spirit of what happened there this past Sunday back in Studio City and Stage 9 at CBS Studios. Alex.
This is Stage 9, home of the TV show Last Man Standing, and the special event station K6H. The first port of call was the roof, where there was a great view of the nearby hills where several local repeaters were located. John Amodeo, NN6JA, the show's producer, had already assembled the Comet H422 antenna, seen here lying on the roof. But the event start time was drawing close, and it was time to raise it to its operating position, 60 feet above the ground. John and Rich, W6VX, expertly raised the Comet H422 and guide it so it was perfectly vertical. Being a temporary structure, the antenna's base was secured in place using several heavy sandbags. The PAPA System's Mike Lackey, N6HKH, one of the lead organizers of the event, gave a quick briefing and then it was time to get on the air. This D-Star node had the smallest display ever seen, especially when compared to the 7-inch display on my IC7700 in Mike Baxter's office. Cecil Casillas, WD6FZA, got the ball rolling, getting one of the first contacts in the special event.
Stage of the Last Man Standing.
Mike Lackey rounded up stations on D-Star, the first being in Australia.
In just a matter of seconds, so let's do this. This is K6H. I'm N6HKH, being helped on logging by AA6RA, and we're going to call for our first station. Please come now. All right, we got VK2VR, and I'm sorry, we're a little rough to start, but we're trying to get all the audio and equipment going. So VK2VR.
Tango November Fox.
Carl Casey Kane, KC6B, did a fantastic job working stations on the linked analog repeaters.
K6H, good morning. Complete call here is Whiskey Bravo 6, Tango November Foxtrot.
This is Kilo 6 Hotel.
Here's John, working from the Last Man Standing bedroom set. A couple of DV dongles were used to link the reflectors used throughout this special event, as was an ICOM IC2820H.
Stations running here. Anyway, I'll put you in the log and we'll move right along here. Any more stations want to make contact, please come in.
Name is John.
Everybody wanted the limited edition QSL card.
If you like a QSL card, you can get one at QRZ.com.
Some log contacts using a computer, but most logged by hand. And everybody got on the radio and made contacts.
Hotel Special Event Station, Last Man Standing, in Studio C.
The famous Heil Sound Finn microphone made a special appearance.
Here also, we're actually
turned sideways for sideband use, of course.
If you watch the show, and just having a fun there. We're operating 20 meters, 10 meters, D-Star, and the IRLP.
It's been a real fun day here at the set of The Last Man Standing. It's been really an event that's going to go down in the PAPA history books. It's one of the most successful events that we participated in. Thanks again for participating.
Cecil said what we were all thinking. It was a great special event.
That is great, Julian. Fabulous job. Well, Last Man Standing. Well, Julian and all of the PAPA system members really pulled off a memorable event. And speaking of a memorable event, one coming up this weekend. It's that time again, November 3rd to November 5th. This weekend is the ARRL Sweepstakes CW Contest Weekend. The ARRL Sweepstakes is the longest-running domestic amateur radio contest, and it started as an on-the-air wish to ARRL founder Hiram Percy Maximum for a big happy birthday, and it's now evolved in one of the finest on-air competitions in radio sport. The objective is simple: for U.S. and Canadian hams to exchange QSO information with as many other U.S. and Canadian stations as possible. And top contestants are switched to certificates and are awarded certificates, even plaques, for an individual, a club, or from the principal sponsor, which is ICOM America. There are actually two contests, one for sideband a few weeks away, but this weekend it is CW for 30 hours. Now, you don't need a giant antenna or a huge amplifier. In fact, many participants run only 100 watts and a simple wire antenna, and everyone competes against similarly equipped stations. And when working the contest, your confirmed contacts can go toward such neat awards like worked all states, or you can even try for a clean sweep by making contact with each of the ARRL and RAC administrative stations. Go to ARRL.org/sweepstakes for the full contest rules and exchange details. And even if you're not contesting, you're taking part in this weekend's CW sweepstakes to test your station's ability, and it'll hone your on-the-air skills. And most of all, you'll have a great time with the sweepstakes because it's just fun. Now, make sure that you visit ICOMAmerica.com Ham Nation for more info on ICOM, who is a principal award sponsor to the ARRL Sweepstakes CW station. You can also enter ICOM's weekly drawing and get all sorts of neat things like T-shirts and hats. So congratulations to previous drawing winners. To check out if you've won something, visit ICOMAmerica.com Ham Nation and click View Last Weekend's Winners. So ARRL Sweepstakes brought to you by ICOM America. And again, don't forget to submit your logs for both last weekend's contest as well as your sweepstakes log for this weekend's contest, because you cannot win if you don't submit those logbooks. There you go, ICOM. Thanks for a great contest coming up. Okay, George, back to you.
Oh, Gordo, that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I wanted to participate in that CQ Worldwide contest and the Last Man Standing event this weekend. Unfortunately, I was traveling and away from home all weekend and did not make it to either one of them. So maybe next year.
Yeah.
I think we've got Don still with us. Don, are you there?
Yeah, I am. I got to do the Last Man Standing. I was 6 minutes in via D-Star, so I got it. You ready for Newsline, George?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go ahead and show the Newsline video. And Alex, go ahead and roll it. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1837, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 31st, 2012. The United States-based Hurricane WatchNet has been activated for Hurricane Sandy. Net operations began at 1100 UTC on Wednesday, October 24th, on 14.325 megahertz to observe and report conditions surrounding the storm to the National Hurricane Center. Jeff Clark, K8JAC, reports.
Net operations began at 1100 UTC on Wednesday, October 24th, on 14.325 megahertz to observe and report conditions surrounding the storm to the National Hurricane Center. As Sandy progresses, the Hurricane WatchNet will be looking for condition reports from stations located in the affected areas. Net organizers say they appreciate the consideration of all amateur operators in keeping the frequency of 14.325 megahertz clear and listening for possible relays.
For more information on the storm and the Hurricane WatchNet, go to HWN.org. GRE, the radio manufacturer, which also represents Elinco here in the United States, has ceased all manufacture of scanner radios. The good news is that Elinco product sales and service will continue. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, has the details.
The news was a bit of a shock to the GRE group in Belmont, California. Word from Japan earlier this month that the GRE personnel in Asia and the United States were being dismissed and scanner operations being discontinued. It was October 16th when the official word was released by GRE-employed U.S. managers of the shutdown in Japan, but there was a pledge to keep the California office open because of its distribution affiliation with Elinco. Michael Herbert, WB6JKV, a service technician and engineer for GRE's Belmont office, officially confirmed for Amateur Radio Newsline that things are still go for Elinco.
GRE America will continue to market, service, and support Elinco's radio products without any interruption. So for us amateurs, it will be business as usual.
Herbert says he's not authorized to say much more. However, he says GRE is waiting on Elinco's new SDR 100-watt HF radio due for delivery by Christmas and is expecting to distribute the new 900 megahertz, 220 megahertz mobile radio about date and time next May.
If you own or are planning to purchase an Elinco brand piece of radio gear, you have nothing to worry about. However, at airtime, the future of GRE-manufactured scanner radios is unknown. Thanks to a dedicated teacher and a grant from the American Radio Relay League, Ham Radio is back at a suburban St. Louis, Missouri school. STL Today reports that a new amateur radio club has been created at St. Charles High School in St. Charles County. The club was started by science teacher Ellen Zare, KD0PES, after the ARRL recently awarded nearly $2,000 to the school. Zare used the grant to buy radio gear and antennas for the station. The last time the school had an active amateur radio club was way back in the 1960s. You can read the full report at the link provided in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. And after more than 8 years as the ARRL Media and Public Relations Manager, Alan Pitts, WNAGP, has retired. Again, Jeff Clark, K8JAC.
During his tenure, Pitts was responsible for developing public relations campaigns that featured the many facets of the amateur radio service. The first of those was the simple but very effective Hello Radio campaign in 2006 that highlighted the fun and friendships of ham radio. That was followed by Emergency Radio, which built on the ARRL and the Amateur Radio Emergency Service's response during Hurricane Katrina. Next was We Do That Radio in 2008. Pitts rounded out his career by spearheading the 2011 Do It Yourself or DIY campaign aimed at recruiting members of the burgeoning maker and hacker community to expand their horizons through becoming amateur radio operators.
While W1AGP has retired from day-to-day work at ARRL headquarters, he's not severed his ties with the National Society. The ARRL is currently seeking a new media and public relations manager. In the interim, Pitts has agreed to continue on a very limited part-time basis during the selection process to find a successor. He also hopes to be able to work as a consultant on the league's centennial projects, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the ARRL. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Hey, there you go. There's your Ham Nation video for this week. And it's Halloween around here. I don't know about where it is around your house, but it's Halloween over here.
It's Halloween over here too, Don.
Great, John. I want that guy's deep voice. How can I get that deep voice from this little cat smile, huh?
You probably need to get some looser underwear, I think, probably to begin.
Roger that. All right, George, take it away. And then if you'll come back to me, I just got something from Jason Gant, U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, regarding the Olivia mode, big time with Salvation Army passing traffic. And we've got plenty of traffic here that's incoming. Back to you, George.
Okay, yeah. Gordo. Boy, it's kind of like Wayne's World around here tonight. I think all the trick-or-treaters have left now. And by the way, is that a cat costume or is that Pepe Le Pew you're wearing there?
Well, I'm not sure, but Julian, I think you've got something on the other side of your face.
Yeah.
No, the other side, Julian?
Where?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, Julian had a little problem with one of our cats, but he'll be okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, right. And he can't even hear anymore. George, from Jason Gant, U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, tuned in. He says that messages are coming out of Saturn via radio, and they're doing it via digital modes. And, you know, I think that's an important part for us to say during these troubled times, that digital modes are so important for ham radio. So whether it's Olivia, not quite as fast as MT-63, Winmore, Winlink, all of them. This is what we do best, and we hope all of you will take training so that you too can handle these incoming messages. Thanks, Pastor Jason, for that input. George, back to your scary face.
Oh, great update there, Gordo. Well, let's go now to Cheryl with the chat room. Oh, wait a minute. That's not Cheryl.
Oh, Cheryl, you've never looked better.
Well, that's a great match.
Yeah, I got this great costume. I look just like that guy Tom that can't drive.
My other Tom friend.
I figured I'd come as a tourist here with the lei and the Hawaiian shirt. So didn't really dress up that well. Not a good costume as George's, but we tried. A little slow in the chat room tonight for questions. They basically were watching the show and enjoying it, and got a couple questions. First of all, I know the answer to this one, but I'll let you guys handle it. When will you be giving the frequencies and everything for all the nets after the show?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. We're going to be on 7263, not 68. They're handling Sandy comms here. 7263, lower sideband. By the way, Mike made 100 plus. His whole team, Mike's entire net control team, 100 plus last week. And I'll let you indicate where we're going to be on 20 meters. Go ahead.
Yeah, on 20 meters, we're going to be on 14.268, I believe. That's the normal frequency. And for the digital modes, EchoLink will be on star, dewdrop in star, or that's node number 355-800. And D-Star is reflector 14 module C, or you can listen at wx4adx.com/listen. Tom, what have you got there next?
Well, I think this one was more of a joke than anything, but it does bring up a good thing. The Hi-O mic that they were using, the Finn mic in the one video, was turned sideways. Was there any reason for that? The one person had brought up that sometimes you got to talk to these microphones sideways. George, you want to handle this one?
Well, I think that's a matter of polarization and not necessarily for the signal as much as what's going into the microphone. What do you think, Gordo?
Well, actually, Gordo and I here, We agree. It's basically, had he been in Australia, he would have turned the microphone upside down. But this time he was talking to the East Coast, so it was rotated 90 degrees actually west, so that way it would go long path around to the East Coast and everything would be fine.
All right, you mallet head, you want a real answer as to why you turn that mic sideways? Let me show you why. Let me pull this pop filter off. Here's why. Pee pop 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 pop. You hear those peas? Now, you turn it sideways, pee-pop, pop, pop, pop. You don't hear those pee-pops. That's why you turn these mics sideways.
Good answer. Of course, I don't know. Let's see if we got one more before we get it back to you guys. They're enjoying the costumes. That's for sure. And that's about it. Nothing really hitting on questions tonight. Will any of the Nets be taking early check-ins, being that it's Halloween out on the West Coast, so they can get going and give out candy?
Let's see, early check-ins. Well, probably Mike is already in position. I'll have to dial him up in just a few moments. But give it a try and see what happens, and hold that 7263 frequency for Michael as he gives out candy. So thanks for joining us. Let me go back to George. And, George, I'll let you orchestrate as to who's next or our next short commercial. George?
Well, we had hoped for a few more questions, so we got a little time to fill. So, Tom, let's talk to you for just a moment there. I know that you do a show on the Internet every Sunday night called HQA Radio, but you have a couple of other shows that are ham radio related as well, don't you?
Yeah, we have a Digital Modes Today show, which has to deal with just digital modes like PSK, Riddy, Hellscriber, and interfacing. But one of our new shows, which has been taken off, is the D-Star show that we put out biweekly Monday evening at 8 o'clock. It's usually up on the website by then and being broadcasted. It is a recorded show, and it's been taking off very well. A lot of people have been watching it, and a lot of good response to it. But other than that, just the typical shows and the Sunday show.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, I noticed someone in the chat room wanted to know if I had a pacer in the garage. No, I don't. But that would be a real classic. Well, Tom, thanks for being with us here tonight and filling in there. And we hope Cheryl will be back with us next week. We hope Bob will be back as well, but I don't know his schedule right now. Gordo, have you heard anything recently?
Yeah, he's really in demand. And Bob says that he'll try and make our schedule as opposed to the concert schedule that he's so involved with. And you never know when he's going to sneak in on Skype. So it still may not be too late on Halloween night that we'll see Bob and Sarah maybe sneak in. Back to you, George.
No, that would be great. Well, let's get on and make a little smoke and solder now. This week, we're back working on that soft rock, the software-defined radio once again. So, Alex, let's take a look at that.
Today on Smoke and Solder, we continue building the soft rock RX-TX ensemble from 5-.com with part two, the local oscillator. For the local oscillator, we'll begin by installing the surface mount components first. There are several surface mount capacitors and the SI570 programmable oscillator. We'll begin by marking pin 1 of the oscillator chip. Next, we'll mark the location of all the capacitors. I've put the capacitors on the board near their final location, and I've put solder paste on each of their pads. Now it's time to take the tweezers and put the capacitors into position. Here's the SI570 programmable oscillator. This is a surface mount component that's a little different than the ones we've dealt with before. You can see right here in the bottom left-hand corner, there's a little dot. That indicates pin 1. If we look at the bottom, we see that there's no legs around the outside of this chip. There are little solder pads on the bottom here, and these are fairly close together, particularly the ones on the end here. So we're going to have to be sure that we don't use too much solder paste and short these out. Now, around the edges of the chip, you'll see that there are some tabs that come out from the pads that you could probably get to with a regular soldering iron, but on the ends here, you want to be careful that you only get solder on that center one and not these two on the side. This is going to be a little of a challenge. I'm going to go with the solder paste. You guys using the soldering iron, good luck, but I know it can be done. I'm going to put the solder paste down sparingly this time. I can't afford to have it short out. I won't be able to get solder wick up under that chip to get out any excess solder bridges. Particularly on the two ends there where we've got those two fine traces coming in between the others. Here's a close-up view so you can see just how much solder paste I have put on here. And not saying that this is the right amount, but if this works for me, then you'll know that's the right amount. Shazam. If it doesn't, then you'll know not to use this amount. I'll carefully position the chip down in the solder paste and move it around gently so I don't smear the paste everywhere to get it lined up as best I can. And then I look carefully around the edges to make sure that these little tabs line up with the center of the pads, especially the two on the ends. Now we'll begin applying heat with the hot air embossing tool, and we're warming up two capacitors here at once. And in a moment, you'll notice the solder start to turn shiny on the ends of the capacitors, and the capacitors may slide just a little bit to align themselves correctly. Now we'll move up to the top of the board, and we'll see immediately the solder starts melting at either end of capacitor 50 there. We'll also notice that the ink we put on there with the Sharpie starts to run a little. We'll heat up the other components here, and they quickly begin melting solder as well. That's because the gun is already up to temperature. You know, I'm kind of beginning to like this solder paste stuff. Let's take a look at the sides of the chip now to be sure that we didn't get any solder bridges. This side looks good, and it looks evenly aligned on the pads there. The other side looks good as well, and so do both of the ends. So I think we're safe here, but just to be sure, I'm going to pull out the ohm meter, and I'll put it on a high resistance scale so it doesn't put out a lot of voltage. And I'll measure between all the pins here on the chip and make sure that I don't have any direct shorts caused from solder bridges. I checked all the pins and didn't find any solder bridges anywhere. I did see high resistance, if any at all, across the pins, so I feel sure that we got a good connection here and won't have problems with this chip. Now it's time to wind the bifiller transformer, and for this we'll need 2 5-inch pieces of the 30-gauge wire. Now, it's not really specified in the kit, but I was able to determine that the red wire is the 30-gauge wire, and the green wire is the 26-gauge. We'll also need the BN43 core, and you need to be careful. This is a binocular core, and there's two different cores like this in the kit, and they're hard to identify since there's no markings. So keep them in the bag so you know you're getting the right one each time. Now I've taken 2 5-inch pieces of the 30-gauge wire, put them in the vise on one end, and duct taped them to my cordless drill on the other end so I could spin them evenly. And now we'll take these and measure to be sure that there's approximately 3 turns per inch. Now we need to make 2 complete windings around the transformer core. And in Tony's kits, he counts it from where you go in one end of the core and come back out the other. So this that we're showing now is 1 complete winding. So we just need to go around one more time, and that's all this transformer requires. Now I'll clip back the leads, and I'll strip the ends of them, and then I'll tin them as well, just to make sure we got all the insulation off. And then we'll use the ohm meter to determine which end of each wire goes to which winding. Once I've done that, I'll use a Sharpie to mark one pair of leads so I know they belong together. Now, here's where the transformer will be mounted. The bottom set of posts here are the primary, and the top set are the secondary. Now, I'll strip back a little bit of insulation from some hookup wire to kind of use that as standoffs to hold the transformer up off the board a little. Now, I've soldered the transformer on, as well as a mini plug, which will be used for our CW paddles. Here's the components we installed today on the board, and it's time to test everything out now. The first thing we need to do is visit the website and download the USB drivers for the ATtiny85 microcontroller and the Control and Configure Ensemble program, as well as some type of software-defined radio program. Now, there are several steps to installing the drivers and the software, as well as some troubleshooting tips at the WB5RVZ.com website on the Ensemble Local Oscillator page. When I plug in the USB connector, the first thing that happens is my computer recognizes this as being an open beacon, since that tiny AT chip, the microcontroller we're using, is the same one that's used with the Open Beacon kit. So in my case here, I won't need to reinstall that driver. Next, we'll run the Configure SoftRock program, and we'll go through a few steps mentioned there on the website to get things up and running right, and then we'll switch to the Test tab, where we can do some tests on the CW key. First, we'll connect the USB connector and then plug in a stereo mini plug into the paddle jack. And I'll use a small test clip and I'll clip it right there to the shield on the connector. And then we can clip to the tip and the ring for the two different paddle inputs. I'll clip to the tip first. And I notice on the test panel that the P2/CW indicator goes from green to red to indicate that that input is working. Next, we'll connect to the ring. And when we do that, we'll notice that the CW2 indicator goes red. So that means our CW paddle inputs are working. If you remember that strange-looking chip earlier, the SI570 we installed, that is a programmable oscillator and is used as our local oscillator in this kit. So we'll do some tests on it now. We'll bring up the tune panel of the Configure SoftRock program, and here we can change the frequency that that oscillator operates at. Now, keep in mind that the actual frequency output is going to be 4 times the number that we dial in here. Now, we could measure the frequency with a frequency counter, but a lot of people don't have that. So what I'm going to do is just wrap some wire around the circuit and run that into the antenna input of my HF receiver, and we'll tune around on it to determine what frequency is coming out of this unit. Now, we've got it tuned to 7.015 megahertz, and that should give us an output frequency 4 times higher, so that's 28.06 megahertz. When I tune around on my receiver, I find that I'm close, but not exactly on that frequency. I'm actually closer to 28.07 than I am to 28.06, and that's probably close enough. Now, there's one final test we can do today, and that's the opto-isolator voltage test. We'll measure from the ground, which is pin 4 of the USB connector, onto pin 1 of the opto-isolator, and we should have less than 0.5 volts. We have 0.039, so that means we pass the test. So everything looks good on the local oscillator. Next, it'll be the divider stage. Okay, there you go. This is, quite an involved kit here. But if we build it a stage at a time and test it as we go, we should have good results in the end. So next week, we're going to take a little break and do something a little different, a little more modest project there, and then we'll get back to the SoftRock again. Now, speaking of contest, ICOM America is giving away another rig here. It's the IC7200, great HF rig. It's the one that's used by the Boy Scouts and all those go kits. Has a lot of features on it, like remote control through a USB port that has the audio, the control data, and everything there. I've used it before. It really works great. And if you'd like to get in on that contest, it's got the IC7200 from ICOM. It also has an MFJ auto tuner and an MFJ power supply, as well as off-center fed dipoles, wire from the Wireman RG213 enhanced cable, as well as some training materials from our friend Gordo at Gordon West Radio School. If you'd like to get in on that, well, then go check out the latest episode of AmateurLogic.tv. The contest is sort of celebrate the 7-year anniversary of the show, and we've just put out the second part of 7 years of highlights and backstory there, and I think you'll find it quite entertaining. For our regular contest this week, I asked a question last week. Since I was using some soldering paste, I ask, where do you store this solder paste when you're not using it? And we had someone who knew, and that's Alex Tarza, N0AMT. And Alex said, the refrigerator is where you should store solder paste. And correct, Alex. So you win this week's prize, which is a copy of Morse code Breaking the Barrier, courtesy of MFJ Enterprises.
And next week, we're going to give away another one of these Constructing HF Wire Antennas books. And this is the last one I have. So if you'd like your chance to win that, well, send me an email to hamnationcontest@gmail.com and tell me, what would you like to see me build in the future? And there's no right or wrong answer on that. It's just going to be a random drawing, but it'll give me some ideas of what people are wanting to see out there. So send that to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and we'll see what people want me to build, and someone's going to win this book right here so they can build their own antennas. Well, we've still got a few minutes to go here, and I want to bring Don back in for just a moment here and ask, Don, what do you have planned in the way of ham radio activities coming up in the near future down in your area?
Well, eventually, I've got 50 feet of Rhone 25 sitting in my garage that I want to get put up, and I've got a Carolina Wyndham that's going to go up, and a vertical for VHF, UHF, and some Squalo antennas that's going to go up. And that's my plan. Since Hurricane Katrina, I've been trying to get this tower up. You know, it only takes two things, time and money. You have one, you don't have the other. So that's something I've been working on for a number of years. You know, I'm able to get out there on my ICOM 7000 in my Jeep and have a lot of fun with that. But I bought this Kenwood TS-2000 at Dayton right after the storm, after Katrina, and so far I've only used it on 2 meter and 440, and I would really like to utilize that radio to its utmost. And so that's my plan, is to finally get my doggone tower up. You know, it's just one of those projects that you want to do, but it takes some planning and some execution to get it done. And one of these days I'm going to have to plan something and maybe even execute something here on Halloween to get that thing up, George.
Well, it sounds like a plan, and time and money, and some of us don't have either of those, so maybe it'll all come together for you, though. It's a shame to waste that rig on just UHF and VHF, so maybe you can get that going. I don't know. Winter's not too bad, so it's kind of wet, though. But
at least it's not sweaty, which is, the good thing about it.
Well,
you're not sweating.
That is true. Gordo, what projects do you have going on over there on the left coast?
Well, on the west coast, we're still trying to figure something out. First of all, if you store solder paste in the refrigerator, Gordo. Seriously, make sure.
Where's my hair gel?
Make sure and have it well marked so no one thinks it's, uh-oh.
This is not my hair gel.
No, Julian's got the wrong one. You see, that's what happens when you store hair gel and solder paste in the refrigerator without marking it. So seriously, hams, mark your paste well so that no one either has it for lunch or, as Julian did, put it in his hair. That's a tough one. Okay, out here on the West Coast, we're continuing to see what we can do to work with Saturn to handle some of the outgoing messages. I encourage everyone to log on to Saturn.org, and they may send you, as they've done several of our hams, namely W6FOG Maritime Mobile Neil. They send him a block of phone numbers, and he's called over 100 phone numbers with the first words of ham operator with good news, and he's been able to relay nice health and welfare reports. So congratulations to those here on the West Coast that are trying to help out our brothers and sisters and everyone else on the East Coast. So that's what we're doing today, and we're going to continue to monitor. And again, thanks to all of you hams that have taken a special part during this troubling time. And now, George, I think we have a Ting commercial. So if it's time for the big Ting commercial, I'll let Alex and the gang go ahead and roll it when they would like.
We have no Ting ad tonight.
And no Ting tonight. All right. Well, my cell phone enjoys it. Okay, George, back to you. And again, hang in there, East Coast. We're thinking of you.
Yeah, thanks, Gordo. And watch out there, Julian. If you got the solder paste in the hair, you definitely don't want to reach for the hot air gun. You're going to have some problems there if you do that. So
yeah, you won't be able to get your tinfoil hat off.
I think I have a problem already.
You've got a problem already, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You stuck.
Lead poisoning.
Have you got any solder wick, Gordo?
not near enough to handle the Julian situation, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, we've got Bill, K5LN, one of our net controls here with us tonight, to talk a little more about the Ham Nation After Show nets. Bill, good evening to you.
Well, hello, George. Good to see you this evening and everybody else. We're here waiting, and we got a few check-ins from the West Coast out there, and everybody's sounding pretty good this evening. We'll see how the band holds out for us tonight. Over.
So you're running the 20-meter net tonight, and what frequency is that on?
Yeah, we're going to be on 20 meters, 14.268. 14.268. And we'll get started right after the show.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, some nights I can't get you on 20 meters here. Other nights it's great. So it's one of those things we just have to kind of try and hope that the propagation gods are with us that night. What do you think are the typical number of check-ins that might come through on 20 meters?
Well, with the band conditions, the way they've been these days, it's been pretty low. It's between 20 and 30 check-ins for the 20-meter net, so we're able to get it finished early. And then we jump on 40 meters to help Mike get his numbers up. And with his three helpers there, they do a great job on 40 meters covering all of the United States. We do have a station out in California that gives us a hand. And that's Gordo out there, but sometimes he can't hear as much as I can hear. But that's usually the number of stations, but we have a good time. I usually get a lot of new stations that are just tuning around 20 meters, and I get an opportunity to tell them about Ham Nation. And they just get in there, and then they look it up on the Internet. And hopefully they come back in the following week. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, that's one thing that's good about these nets. It helps spread the word about Ham Nation because there's people constantly tuning around. I've heard them myself, and all they know it's a net going on there, and they're not really sure what the net's all about. And you guys do a great job of educating them and letting them know about the show and where they can find it. And we just want to thank all our net controls for that. You have a real big signal here in Mississippi, Bill. Of course, we're not that far apart, but when you come in on 40 meters, I think I hear you better than anyone else.
Well, thanks, George. I appreciate that. And, yeah, you come through real well on 40 meters. Dale does, too. I hope that Al up there in Connecticut is doing okay. I didn't see him on the live web broadcast that the guys on 40 meters have, but hopefully he's doing well. Dale's got a great signal, and Mike and I have trouble on 40 meters, mostly because of my antenna, not his. We live in a city lot area, so the antenna is quite small. It's just a plain dipole up 20 feet, but still it gets out okay, and thanks for Dale up there in Kansas that has just a tremendous signal, and we're able to use him to check in. So it's really great to have it around there. I'd like to get some more guys to volunteer to help out on 20, but we'll see how that works out, and we'll just keep having fun. Over.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about ham radio is, you know, we can kind of cooperate with each other. So you put guys out in different areas around the country, they can hear each other, but they can also hear other stations that the other net controls cannot. So kind of lets us throw together a network really quick to handle this type of traffic and emergencies or whatever. You know, like Gordo was saying, he's out there in California, and there's guys on the West Coast that are helping people over on the East Coast. That's because, you know, the propagation changes throughout the day, and sometimes a station further away is able to copy the signal and get the message through when the guys right in close cannot. Gordo, have you got anything there you'd like to talk with Bill about before we go?
No, I just want to congratulate Bill and his entire team. You know, it's not only just the net controllers like Mike and Bill, but all of their other net controllers that keep these nets rolling. So, Bill, we've got you here on the ICOM 14268. And Michael, we've got you here at 14263. So we'll go between each of the stations and see what we can do to help out in between the trick-or-treaters. So happy Halloween, everyone. East Coast, you are in our hearts, and any messages that we can handle. Here's the Jewel Man to shed a little bit of blood to say...
Have a great night, East Coast. We love you. Take care.
All right, 73 all from Gordo and Julian and the cat household. Meow, WB6NOA. Back to you, George.
Okay, Gordo. Yeah, try to keep that cat away from Julian. It's looking worse by the moment there. Bill, thanks for being with us here tonight. And thanks for all you do on the Ham Nation Nets here. And we look forward maybe to talking with you here in just a few minutes on the air.
Yeah, roger. Well, we look forward to it, George. I got the antenna pointed in your direction. That's where we're going to get started. We'll give the preamble here, tell everybody about what Ham Nation is about before we get started. Then we'll go through the short roster that we have. Then we'll open it up for open calls. But we'll see. We know it's going to be a little challenging here in the central states because of the trick-or-treaters. And, you know, folks have priorities. So we'll do the best we can. And have a good time. Hope to see you a little bit later, George. 73s.
All right, 73, Bill. Don, down there near Voodoo Country, have you got any parting words for our Halloween crowd tonight?
Oh, just everybody, hopefully the trick-or-treaters were safe and got lots of goodies tonight. And for those of you in the East Coast and up in Canada that have been affected by Sandy, those of us down here in the New Orleans area, we've got your back as always, and we know what you're going through. We've been there too many times, and we're here to help and to keep you in our prayers, if nothing else. So from South Mississippi and around New Orleans, we're thinking about you, George.
Okay, Don, 73, good to see you again tonight. And one more word about the Nets here before we go. As we mentioned, the 40-meter net is on 7.268 megahertz. It'll be 7.263 tonight because of the hurricane traffic going on the regular frequency. The 20-meter net, 14.268. The Echo Link is on Star. Do drop in Star conference server, or that's node number 355-800. And D-Star, Reflector 14 Module C, with Joe over there. And we'll have Joe on here one day with us. If you don't have a D-Star radio or any ham radio and you just want to listen to one of these nets, you can listen to the D-Star net online at wx4adx.com/listen. And also, we just saw Cheryl in the chat room there. She finally got off work, and she's going to be on 3847 or 3.850 megahertz tonight. So check her out as well. Guys, we enjoy everyone being here tonight, and I'm going to jump on those nets now and see how good propagation is on this Halloween night here in Mississippi. One other thing I want to mention, and that's our good friend Dan runs the wiki for Ham Nation. You can go to the Twit website there and click on wiki and go down to Ham Nation and get all the show notes there from the various shows, as well as some links and other information you might like to have. You can also edit the show notes there if you see something that should be added to them. So once again, thanks Dan, N9LVS, for providing that wiki for us and keeping it updated. And that's it. So 73 here from Jackson, Mississippi, and we'll see everyone again next week.
And thanks to Tom for taking care of the chat room for us tonight, too. Good night from South Mississippi.